Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Ben Errington. Ben Errington. And today we are joined once again by the amazing, the incredible, the number wizard and horror aficionado, Mr. Andy Condrit-Turn. How's it going, Andy?
Pretty good, guys. I'm not sure I'm going to top that intro as long as I live now.
That's okay. That's okay. You peaked on our podcast, and that's
downhill from here.
Downhill from here, or we could have a nice plateau now from you know.
Once you've reached the top, yeah.
How's it going? Andy, you saw Annabelle Creation, right? Very recently.
Yes, I went yesterday. In fact, how time flies. Yeah, it was all right, you know. Yeah. It was all right. I feel like I didn't give the first one as good a shake because I watched it on a plane where nothing's really going to be scary on a plane, right? Like at a tiny little letterbox screen. But it was really good. It was a lot of it's like by the numbers, and you'd be forgiven for thinking, oh, they're not really doing anything different here. But still, there were some bits I was like, I'm just going to stay cool and have a sip of my drink now just so I can look away from the screen.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've not seen the first one. I've seen both the Conjuring films and I thought they were both all right.
Yeah, I don't know, the first Annabelle film isn't particularly great. I saw it in the old cinema, and it was, I don't know, it was okay. It was just a bit kind of like a bit of a letdown, but the Annabelle Creation is meant to be a lot better. It's the same with Ouija. Ouija was pretty pants, but then the prequel was directed by Mike Flanagan, and that was pretty good as well.
So it's like, I quite like that.
Yeah. I've not seen that.
Yeah, it's Mike Flanagan's the guy who's doing Gerald's Game, and he's doing House on Haunted Hill. He's got loads of cool stuff coming up, so it'd be interesting to see. And he did Hush. Did you watch it?
I really liked Hush. I saw it on Netflix a while back.
Yeah.
I've not seen that either. God, I'm really, really slacking.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's cool, man. I don't know what those like ghost films. They're like everywhere nowadays. I don't know if I'm getting a bit bored of them. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think that's why I don't really watch them, because I think I am maybe a little bit bored of them. I find that like as soon as I lose like my patience with one franchise, it kind of happens across the board.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's because they all do look quite similar, so it's almost like my want to go and see those films because of like I lost all patience with Paranormal Activity, for example.
Yeah.
Anything that looks even remotely like that, I'm like, no.
Over ghosts. It's over.
Yeah.
I'm so over ghosts, man.
I feel like we have a lot of that kind of thing where it's like Mr. Teeth, and it's like a weird, like crinkly Chris Packett man. Like, we get a lot of that recently.
Yeah, like the bye-bye man, or the hello, here's the scary man, the boogeyman, the coming to get you and touch your
genitals,
anus man.
That whole genre, it's all like the legally distinct from the Slender Man genre, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not the Slender Man, honest man.
It's the Thin Man.
Thin Man. That was one, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, shit. Oh, I'll be sued.
Yeah. The tall, thin, odd bloke. Man.
Bloke.
Yeah, I mean, it's just awful, isn't it, really? It's just the same old regurgitated crapola.
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like zombies are kind of a little bit done as well, but maybe
not. I don't know, mate.
Did you a comeback?
Yeah, Train to Busan was really good. If you guys watched that.
I don't think, but with zombies, you don't tend to get loads of really crap ones. You know, I mean, I guess you do, but they're not like big studios aren't putting out zombie films.
No.
You think off the back of like Walking Dead, maybe zombie films would have had some sort of resurgence, but no, it doesn't seem like they are. Like, what's the last big?
I feel like Walking Dead is like the last nail in the coffin of that kind of zombie genre, right? Like, it feels, I don't know, people seem to be a bit tired of it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Shambling zombies, possibly.
Yeah.
There's always good stories to tell, I think, with zombies, because it is a cliche, but it's the, we like the people stories, don't we?
Yeah.
We like the stories of the survivors more than we like the stories of the zombies. So as a backdrop, there's still plenty of stories to tell. It's just not going over the same old stories of people stuck in a place. Are they going to get out of the place? Are the zombies going to get in? They all fight each other and...
Yeah, they fight each other and then the zombies get in. And then, it's basically
every series of The Walking Dead, which is we're in a new place. There are threats from people and threats from zombies. Which one's going to get us first?
Someone cocks it up. There's a couple of talking episodes because the budget's run out.
Yeah.
Repeat.
Yeah. Did you ever used to watch Dragon Ball Z? I remember like three or four episodes every single season of just powering up and thinking about fighting. I feel like a lot of TV is that. That like just the passing the time. Just like I feel like every season should be... At the most, 10 episodes long. I feel like Stranger Things is 8 episodes and it's so tight and so succinct. And we don't need 22 episode seasons.
I genuinely think 6 to 8 is ideal.
Yeah.
To tell a decent story. When you think of something like Daredevil, how many episodes of Daredevil were him recuperating in his apartment?
Yeah. Well, he got beat up pretty bad there, so we've got to give him some time.
Too many episodes of trying to explain to Foggy what could have been a 5-minute... Oh, you didn't tell me you were Daredevil. It was really dangerous to know I was Daredevil. That's a fair point. I won't be so angry now.
Yeah.
I love in Daredevil how he just went off of Karen as well. Like, he was proper into her at one point, and then later on he's just like, nah, not interested in you type. Anymore.
Maybe he's read ahead in the comics. He knows what's due for her.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They will clear, mate.
So, in terms of keeping the zombie genre fresh, I feel like the Girl with All the Gifts was a pretty fresh idea, and that feels to me like a bit of a spiritual sequel to today's film. Have you guys seen the Girl with All the Gifts? Andy, I know Ben has. Have you, Andy?
I haven't. It's on the list. I'm aware of it, and I saw the trailers for it, but I missed it at the cinema. I had a pretty short run, so I need to pick it up. It's available like on home video now, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's good.
Available on the VHS.
Yeah, on VHS.
it's good. It is really good. It is a take on the zombie genre, isn't it? Because it's sort of like a contagion sort of thing, and it reminds me of The Last of Us a bit. But the screen adaptation of the book. I mean, it's one of the only film adaptations I think I've ever seen where it's pretty much exactly the same as the book.
Yeah.
Every scene.
And I don't know how well that translates, like, you know, with the Lord of the Flies element at the end. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it feels like a spiritual sequel to this because it's to 28 Days Later, because it's that whole post-apocalyptic London. It feels like the same world, but like 28 years down the line or something. But it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely worth a squirt.
Worth a squirt. Okay, so today's episode contains spoilers. I feel like we should say that. We always forget to. And last week we talked about The Others, and this week we're talking about number 25 on the list, 28 Days Later. Ben, do you want to give us a bit of a rundown of what the film's about?
Yeah, this is episode 28 as well, which I think is highly exciting, the fact that we're doing 28 Days Later. We haven't planned that at all, have we?
No.
That's the magic of this podcast. It's just magic. Okay. So 28 Days Later is a 2002 British post-apocalyptic horror film directed by Danny Boyle, written by Alex Garland and starring Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson, Megan Burns, and Christopher Eccleston. The plot depicts the breakdown of society following the accidental release of a highly contagious virus called Rage, and it focuses upon the struggle of four survivors to cope with the destruction of the life they once knew.
So this is what Empire magazine has to say about it. Debates raised about whether the fast-moving infected were zombies or not. That's not the meat of why Danny Boyle and writer Alex Garland's tale of his destroyed society is so effective. Like all great horror movies, it's about us rather than the other, and peers into the dark heart of humanity. How far would you go faced with such a situation? You may not love the answer, and there's so much to admire visually with a Day of the Triffids-esque emptied London shot guerrilla style in early mornings. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 87% fresh. IMDb gave it 7.8. It's still in the IMDb range. The Facebook group, Duncan Everson says, I couldn't believe how much it was like Day of the Triffids when I first saw it, but it was better the second time. Which, to Day of the Triffids is something I never watched, never read or anything until recently. And I can see what he means now, having read it. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a good film. How many times have you seen this, Ben?
How have I seen this? Oh, God, loads. This is probably one of those films that I watch on like a yearly basis. You know those films you kind of just return to? I mean, this is one of like the top... There's probably three horror films that I kind of return to on a yearly basis. This is one of them because it scares the absolute bejesus out of me.
What are the other ones?
The other ones are The Thing and The Exorcist.
The Innocents.
And The Innocents. And I also go back to the 1931 version of Dracula because I love it and just enjoy it.
The Devil Rides Out. What about you, Andy? How many times have you seen this film?
Oh, it's again, I see this one. It's quite a regular watch. It's a good, like, you're having friends around for a horror night. A good solid choice if you're not going to go to the new is 28 Days Later. We saw it on the guys that do that Secret Cinema. They did a screening of it in London the other year as well. It's it was crazy good. I guess spoilers for that as well, but that's finished now, so that will never exist again. But there's quite some panic to it when you're there in a warehouse in central London. Like, they're playing out scenes from the film. Like, there are people in makeup chasing you up a flight of stairs where you go into this flat, and there's a girl pinning the door closed, and then gives you a bit of creme de menthe, which was nice.
Nice.
Oh, lovely. who doesn't want creme de menthe?
Yeah.
After a run.
after a run. Oh, I'm ever so parched. Can somebody pass me the creme de menthe? Oh, thank you. Guzzle it down.
So, Andy, have you got any other films that you watch every year, or is this just... like Ben?
I would say for me, I go back to some of the classics, like usually as we're getting towards this time of year, actually, in the run up to Halloween, I watch Freddy Krueger comes out quite often, watch some of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, watch some Friday the 13th. I like a bad horror movie, one we were talking about just before, things like, then again, I take it back, it's not bad, the 80s version of The Blob.
It's great, it's amazing. I really love it.
Yeah, I love some movies like that. I love actually genuinely bad horror movies like Chopping Mall as well. That I've watched that more times than I should have. And Sleepaway Camp as well. I'm not sure if you've seen that, but it's quite an experience.
What's that one? It's like Spa Day or something. It's about the pretty famously bad horror movie about like a spa where people get burned up by sunbeds and stuff. I don't know.
I think I've seen a poster for it. It's like a health spa. I've not seen it.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So, I mean, this is, I've seen this film so many times. I think I saw it early this year and I watched it with headphones on the Mac and it's still just as effective as ever. Like, it's that music. I think it's something to do with that music. It's so, and like, when you write the scene through London and like London's empty, especially now that I know London a lot more and I know their locations, it feels so eerie and so creepy, but it's so effective. It's a really great film, this is.
Yeah, I wonder with that, does it resonate with us guys that live in the UK and probably are more familiar with London than people that live overseas? Because
I think that's part of it, yeah. I think that's one of the reasons it affects me so much, is because not just the way it's shot, not just the soundtrack, but I think just seeing these recognisable places that, you know, you've been
Manchester.
To.
Manchester just on fire.
Yeah. Oh, there's Manchester over there. It's just on fire. Oh, yeah. Bloody hell. That's unfortunate. I think just the fact that you see these sort of places and they're completely desolate and they're completely empty, void of human life, seeing that is so creepy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just like looking out your window and seeing absolutely nobody around and knowing that there's been some sort of outbreak. is horrible. But yeah, I think the soundtrack's probably one of the most effective horror soundtracks for me, because it's so minimalist. And I think most of the time it's only sort of like guitar and bass and drums. There's not much orchestral stuff at all.
No.
It's like all guitar, it's all guitar based, and it feels really raw, and it feels really it just feels so real. And I think that's part of it. And it's sort of, the soundtrack sort of goes from being completely bleak and hopeless to sort of uplifting, and then sort of there's so much energy and so much.
This soundtrack, it makes me even more annoyed with the soundtrack The Descent. The Descent soundtrack is so lazy, whereas this is like innovative and like creative and stuff.
Exactly. And so it's John Murphy, isn't it? And as far as I'm aware, he did everything on the soundtrack. As far as I'm aware, I'm not sure if that's a fact, but yeah. So it's just one of those soundtracks. It's just great.
Can we talk about
obviously the in the house in a heartbeat. The main theme was obviously which I think is used so sparingly in this film. So I went back and I watched 28 Weeks Later as well, and it's used all the time in that film.
Yeah.
Anytime there's any sort of moment of tension, really want to ramp up the tension, that track is used, which is a bit weak really when you think about it. But it's used so sparingly in this film, obviously only for the one sequence, that when it actually, the big crescendo, when it builds and builds and builds, I mean, you're right there with everybody in that house.
Yeah, yeah.
Shitting yourself. Shitting yourself.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a bit in a bit, because there's some bits I want to sort of talk about. But like, also, I just wanted to sort of quickly chat about the visuals, because this is like one of the first films shot on DV, like a feature film shot on digital video, and it really like doesn't look that great. But like, it kind of works in a way. But there's so many like weird like color artifacts on the screen. I don't know. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it looks a bit washed out. Other times it looks sort of too bright. Other times it looks too green. Other times it looks too blue. Like it never quite looks right. But that kind of adds to the whole uncertainty of it.
Yeah,
that it is a bit weird. It is a bit dreamlike.
Yeah,
it's almost like
it feeds into it. It feeds into the whole aesthetic of it. I think it almost makes it feel more real that it doesn't look like a really polished Hollywood. Yeah. Production when you come out. I looked at the budget where it, like, they made the film for like $8 million, which is more money than I'll ever see, but for a film.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in 2002, whatever it was. That's like nothing at all.
Yeah, and going back to 28 Weeks Later again, is that film looks completely different. That film was obviously shot on film, and that looks like a polished blockbuster horror film. And it just doesn't really work for me. Like that sort of sense of hopelessness, that desolation I've already mentioned, is like nowhere in that film. But in this, it's just there constantly. Even in the scenes of like quiet reflection, even in the scenes where people are telling their stories of survival, you constantly feel the threat of something or someone ready to spew blood in your eyes.
Yeah, yeah, hack it up in your eyes. Lovely. Okay, so let's get into the story a bit then. So the key players, we've got, I want to say Cillian, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, Cillian Murphy as Jim, Naomi Harris as Selena, Brendan Gleeson as Frank, we've got Megan Burns playing Hannah, got some trivia about Megan later on, Christopher Eccleshakes as Major Henry West, he pops in again, and we'll talk about those guys. I mean, the main three characters, I guess, you look at it, Silly Boy Murphy, Naomi Harris, and Megan Burns. But okay, so I mean, how does the film start? We've got like the news things of the people, the violence, right?
Yeah, they're Clockwork Orange and some apes, aren't they? They're making them watch loads of nasty, like video nasties.
Little matchsticks in their eyes to keep them, keep them open. Yeah.
Because they're trying to cure it, aren't they? Because that's what, I forget the actor's name, but it's, because I know he's like a comedy actor normally, isn't he?
Oh yeah, it's David Schneider.
And he's not to be confused with
Rob Schneider.
Yeah, he looks like an English version of what's the guy from Little Shop of Horrors and Ghostbusters. Do you know what I mean?
Rick Moranis.
Oh, Rick Moranis. He's got the big. His mouth is too big for his face. It obviously works for him. He's a comedy guy. So he starts with. We've got like super violent images. I think that's like just setting like the theme of the film: rage, violence, and people killing people and all that jazz.
Do we know if this was like that footage was created for the film, or that was just like stock footage that was taken from different places? Because I mean, some of it looks pretty brutal,
right?
There's one bit where there's a guy being hung and he's been hit with a sledgehammer. I'm hoping yeah. it's like fake. Is it real?
It looked like it, and it looked like sort of just flying about like a rag doll. It looked real. Yeah. You know, when you did it, looked, I don't know if it is, but it looked pretty horrible.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing you accidentally click on Reddit and like a live leak and then go, oh,
yeah.
Ruined my entire day. Yeah.
I was really enjoying that pot noodle, but now it's going to have to go and now we're going to still eat it.
Yeah. You just leave it a minute or two and then get back on it. Okay, so we've got these monkeys, chimpanzees, sorry. They want to assume. And they're being like forced to watch these sort of horrible images, and
then we get force-fed some violence.
Apparently, this comes pretty hot after foot and mouth disease, and apparently, like that might have played into it a little bit, and mad cow disease and that kind of infection thing that was happening in England around at that time.
What? Is that how that started? There were farmers all around the country forcing cows to watch violent internet videos.
That's why they were infected with mad. They had they were like so angry those cows. Yeah, so I don't really understand how they're trying to cure them by hooking them up to those TV screens. But then we get the activists.
Are they trying to cure them, or are they trying to like understand the rage virus? I don't know.
That's what the scientist says. Before you can cure it, you have to understand it. So
right,
I guess eventually they're building towards a cure for.
I reckon he's just enjoying watching these chimps suffer.
Yeah.
I'll
get round to the cure eventually, but first, all these videos.
Yeah, all of my favourites.
Unless, like, he's that one wasn't infected, and they were trying to see if watching all these video things, like, infected him in some way. I don't know. It doesn't really make any sense why they would do that. But so the activists are like, shut up, guy from Little Shop of Horrors. We're going to get these monkeys out of here. And then they get him out.
This is a classic. The guy is telling you not to do it, and he's explaining quite succinctly why you don't let them out, because they're all infected with this virus, and they just ignore.
Yeah.
Silly activists.
Yeah, like if they could have rabies. They could be monkey gonorrhea or whatever. Like, stay away from them. Why would you try and hug it?
Yeah, of all the things to do. Come here, monkey.
Chat with it as well.
Give me a big slobbery kiss.
Okay, so and then so what happens? So they let the monkeys out. The chimp bites one of the females. She goes mental. She didn't like it apparently. And then the shit hits the fan. I think that's it, right?
There's lots of blood spewing about. I mean, this is where we first see what happens when people get infected. I think Luke's about to get infected right now.
Just gonna let the dog out.
Yeah. Who let the dog out? Luke.
Okay, so we do need to answer the question. So are they zombies or are they something else? Do you class them as zombies?
Because they die, right? So
yeah, so they die. So they've got, they're not the undead, they're infected, and they've got a, well, I mean, we do find out how long it takes them to starve to death, but yeah, they're not zombies. I mean, you would put this film in a zombie genre just because it ticks a lot of the boxes.
Yeah,
a lot of the tropes. Post-apocalyptic, survival, all this stuff. But they're not zombies as such. They're fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I mean, zombies are terrifying anyway, but this is just mad. They're like athletes, man.
Yeah, well, I think after, like, because Shaun of the Dead came out around a similar time, and like it looked kind of fun to be in a zombie apocalypse because you get your cricket bat out and sort of just like whack them on the head. But like this was like, I wouldn't want to be surrounded by these guys. Just because they vomit up on you. Have you ever had someone be sick on you?
It's horrible, yeah.
It's really disgusting, yeah.
Have you ever had someone run after you that fast? Like your chest goes all tight, you're like, hey. Yeah. Trying to run away from these guys would be agony. I don't want to get involved.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so and then we cut to 28 days later. And we're introduced to, this is the Day of the Triffids bit. So this happens the Day of the Triffids. So a guy wakes up in the hospital and like London, he's in London, the shit hits the fan, has already hit the fan even. So Jim, we're introduced to him, he's got the shaved side of the head. Is that where that style comes from? I've never seen that before, this film, and then I've seen a lot of people.
I was assuming he'd had some sort of brain surgery, right?
Yeah, the head injury look.
Head injury, yeah. I mean, oh yeah. Oh, you're really rocking cool. That head injury look. You look great today. Thank you. I've just had a head injury.
And then, so Jim wakes
up.
We also
see his penis.
We do. Anyway, yep. And then.
We do.
Totally forgot about it. I'd repressed that memory until you said it. And then
that's my favorite bit.
It's highlights. If you were showing a monkey your highlight reel, Ben, it'd just be that one scene on a
just
loop.
Just a penis scene over and over again. Yeah. He's got one. We've all got one.
Yeah. So he climbs out of the bed, takes the IV out. There's no one there. He's in the hospital all alone. He does what any sane person would do. He loots the pop machine and he grabs like bags and bags of like Lilt and Coke and Dr. Pepper.
There's loads of cans of Pepsi in this film.
Yeah.
I'd never noticed it before, but I reckon cans of Pepsi are shown and mentioned at least 3 times.
And a can of
Lilt.
He does state a little bit later on that he personally prefers a Tango.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he does.
Yeah.
Also, I've only got Pepsi or Lilt. Oh, you ain't got a Tango, have you? No, I haven't, because the world's fucking ended. You don't get choice.
Can't be picky in that situation. I'd be like, we've got Iron Brew. That's my drink of choice.
Oh my God, you're mad.
What? Out of any fizzy drink, what would you? If you had to live off one for the rest of your days, what would you go for?
Dr. Pepper Crew.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
I love it. that's right. That is right, Luke.
What about you, Andy?
Cherry Coke for life.
That's good. It's good.
It's a good choice as well.
I'm still going to say Iron Brew, although I will say, like, on a really hot day when you're really, when you're first quenched, a cold can of just regular Coke. I don't know what it is about that. It's something magical.
The pure sugar just destroying your soul, which is great. It just feels great. Tastes great. Rots your teeth away. Lovely.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're introduced to one of the most iconic scenes in I think like film history, maybe, I don't know. So Jim leaves the hospital and he walks around London. If you've ever been around London, it's like constantly busy. So to see London as dead as this, it's kind of insane. He's like screaming out for people. He's got his cans of pop in his swag bag, and
he had the foresight, even though he didn't know what had gone on. To drink as many tins of pop as he wanted and just fill his boots with as many as he could.
Whatever the scenario was, if he found all those cans, he'd still put them all in his bag and go, I'm going to have these later.
He's the kind of guy who just kind of kicks the pop machine until he gives them a can rather than just pays for them.
Yeah. They should be paying me to drink this shit.
Yeah. So, this is insane, especially, like I say, because after like knowing London a bit more and like going, oh, I used to live there, or like, I used to go there. Like, it's just weird. And I don't really know how they did it, because like even if you go like quite early in the morning, there's still people about. I don't know. It's strange. I don't know. Okay, so and then what happens? Is that where it ends?
So he's pretty much walking around London at this point. There's like an overturned bus. Then he finds a wall which is like full of like missing people. And here is where the soundtrack again really starts to sort of ramp up. And then he sort of nudges a car and the car alarm goes off, and just the sense of like tension and just like Jesus Christ, what's going to happen during this scene is agonizing.
Yeah, and then
he nips the church, right?
Yeah, he goes to the church. Apparently, so I didn't read this, but apparently there's a mass suicide there. Did you guys read that?
I didn't know if it was a mass suicide. I kind of just saw piles and piles of bodies. I thought maybe bodies had just been put there.
Yeah,
out the way, you know.
Yeah, I just thought they were dead. I didn't read into it that they'd all killed themselves at that point.
I don't know if this Wikipedia just assumed that. I'm not too sure. But
there's a bit now, which is like one of the most terrifying moments, I think, for me of the film. It's when he sort of just leans over and just says hello, and then two clearly infected blokes sort of just turn around, gulping, and there's a really horrible, like, ominous like note of like the soundtrack at this point.
Yeah.
And they kind of just go, ah.
And that's the right old gas.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were going to say it was when the scariest bit was when the priest runs after him and he wallops him with a fizzy pop right across
the
face.
He's in the tins, didn't he? He's good jumping
up. It's a good trick. And when he was putting him in his bag, he's thinking, this would be a fucking good weapon, mate. carry a bag full of cans.
Yeah.
Well, if you get a priest with these, then
that priest is
I'm quids in.
But
so this is the first time we see the infected.
Yeah.
It from like Jim's point of view. So obviously we do see it in the first scene, but this is the first time we see it from the affected. I mean, it's pretty horrible.
Yeah. They're kind of like a gormless, sort of angry, gormless face. It looks like the kind of people you don't want to bump into on sort of like a Friday night in town. Like, they've got WKD stains around their mouth. Exactly. Hey, yes.
I grew up in Tamworth, so there've been nights like that.
Yeah. Me in Mansfield as well, there's just been a few nights like that. Booze Britain, I think there's a programme all about it. But so as he's running away from like these infected people, he gets saved by some Molotov cocktails. It's where I'm introduced to Selena and a guy called Mark. Don't worry about him too much. Don't put any emotional...
Don't
get attached to him. For some reason, they blow up a petrol station. I'm not too sure why.
Just it looks cool, mate. I
mean, £5 million budget this film was made for, and it's incredible, really.
Like, yeah, but I mean, they really do linger on the fact that the petrol station explodes. I think we see it happening about 10 times in a row. There are lots, several angles, so many action replays. They really milk it.
Maybe that's part of the condition of saving him. Maybe between Selena and Mark, we're going to save this guy. All right, but I'm going to blow this petrol station. Fair enough.
Bloody hell, Mark. You've been going on about that blown out petrol station for days. I really want to do it.
Save him with this stick, you know. No, Molotovs.
And then we get the joke. Mark, they sort of hole up in like a little corner shop. There's more pop, I think, there. And then, like, Mark tells him a joke. I think it was particularly funny. I think Selena's, like, pissed off about it. Something about, like, a lion.
And a giraffe,
You can't leave that lion there.
It's a giraffe, mate. Giraffe. That's the one, yeah. Yeah. And then he goes, it looks like someone's not got a sense of humour. And then walks, like slumps off. And I'm thinking, dude, if your joke doesn't land, you can't just, like, assume they've not got a sense of humour.
You can't blame your audience.
Take the L, man. Take the L.
And, take the L.
Okay, so what happens now? So they're holed away in this little corner shop. So
Selena kind of explains to Jim what's been happening, the virus, what it is, where it's saying it's been reported in Paris and New York as well, so suggesting it's obviously been spread even further. They sort of just explain that a lot of people have been evacuated.
Yeah.
And pretty horrible, really.
Okay, yeah. So I think we get the idea that Selena's no nonsense sort of taking, I don't want to say bitch, but you know, the sort of positive.
The cat fits.
Yeah. And then Mark is expendable, I think, is how we're supposed to see him. But anyway, so Jim's like, I want to go see my mum and pap. They're nearby, I think.
And yeah, then, he seems to reckon he'll be able to walk it. I think it'll take like a few. They sort of say it'll take a couple of hours, possibly. Mm. But Selena kind of goes from saying, "What's the point? They're obviously going to be dead. Everyone you love's going to be dead."
Yeah.
But she's convinced quite quickly to go along with him, with Jim, to his parents' house, which they do. But obviously, they all travel at daytime.
Yeah, mate, getting around London is chaos, especially about the tube. Have you ever been down there when you've got a tube strike on? It's insane.
Yeah, walks a lot.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, but they walk along the train track anyway, don't they?
Yeah, at some point. Along the DLR track, yeah. Okay, and then, so to get to Jim's house, Jim goes to see his parents. They're dead, a couple of corpses. They've left him a nice note. Because they left him a note or something to say, like, we left
yeah,
you.
Don't
we left
wake
you
up. There.
Yeah,
but if you've read that, you've already it's already gone. I'd put a more meaningful note, like there's a knife in the drawer, use that.
We've saved you a space on the edge of the bed, there's some more pills.
Oh yeah,
we've saved you some pills and some wine, because there is a bit left in the bottle. They should have written a more meaningful note, really.
Yeah.
But on a production note here, I was impressed later when we see him looking in the kitchen.
Yeah.
The sort of deads they've got to be his dead parents, they match the home videos and the photos that you watched that later.
True.
Whoever the continuity chap was, thumbs up.
Wait, so what matches? The people, like the...
Yeah, the the dead bodies that they have.
Yeah.
That are all rotten on the bed when he comes in and finds them.
Yeah.
I think they're a good enough match, if not the people in makeup to the photos.
Solid match. I thought they were pretty good looking corpses as well, because I think occasionally in films like this or in films like zombie films or anything, corpses can tend to look a bit shit, a bit shoddy. But these kind of look like, I mean, I haven't seen many dead bodies.
Recently.
But they look like pretty good dead bodies. I was convinced by them being dead bodies.
Yeah, yeah. Nice and yellowy green sort of.
And they looked like they'd still be a little bit juicy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't want to touch one. Like I've got a feeling if you touch one, the finger would sort of go in a little bit too much. But I mean, like through the skin.
What on earth are you doing to them? Leave them alone, Luke. Let them rest. Have their dignity.
Yeah.
I think they would have dressed up a bit, though, because they're in there like some pants. Pretty grubby pants.
Yeah.
That they're lying in bed with. You're going to put your best on.
Yeah. Because you're going to like yourself and you're going to, what's the word? Not excavate.
Evacuate your
excavate
bowels.
Is a little
I don't think you care, do you? I just want to be comfortable. I mean, I'd want to die in my pants.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want to leave a sexy corpse as well, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they're dead. Jim covers the mum up in the duvet. And then they decide to stay the night. Jim, in the middle of the night, Jim's downstairs. He's watching some family videos. This bit scared the crap out of me. Even like this time I watched it. So he's watching the home videos. It's like a really serene moment.
He's just imagining the home video thing, isn't he?
Is
that right? Yeah. That's what I got.
He must have had it on. Otherwise, how do they... I always took away from this bit that by watching videos, that's how he attracted people to the house.
I thought it was just the candle he had. I thought he was just imagining.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, imagining really loudly.
Because I don't think they've got any electricity in there. Oh, yeah. He was imagining.
Quiet, Jim. I can hear you bloody imagining.
Mom and Dad's voice.
Yeah, so I think it's the candle because he kind of sees a shadow of something on the ceiling, which is one of them running sort of through the back garden.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because he sees a picture of them on the fridge, and then he kind of imagines this, and then he sort of imagines the drinking of the...
It makes
he
a downs, lot...
He downs an old carton of orange juice as well.
That classic memory, the day I drank all the orange juice.
But, like, it does make more sense, because I was kind of thinking, like, it didn't look like a projector, like, on the... Like, projecting on the wall. It just looked like a weird image sort of stuck to the wall. And also... like, why would he... No one has a projector. Like, it's just not a thing people have, right? So that does make more sense.
Hey, man, it's just a representation of his imagination by Danny Boyle.
But that's way more dream... Like, that's... There's no more sequences like that, is there?
Why would you have a home video of your mum coming in with a shopping and you drinking all the orange juice?
Well, that was a classic day, as we've established.
But let's talk about it. He literally grabs a brand new orange juice... Starts drinking some, and his dad goes, "Oh, can I have a little bit?" He goes, "It's gone. We just fucking drank 2 liters of orange juice. What's wrong with you?"
That's why they killed themselves. All we wanted.
Yeah. Okay, so as he's imagining it, then suddenly it kind of looks like an action movie sort of entrance, actually, like a SWAT team entrance. One of the rage zombies like flies through the patio door. And attacks him, and David shit me up.
From the ceiling, so, doesn't he?
Yeah,
that's weird.
He's got a house in London with a skylight and everything.
Yeah,
must be for money.
And it's a proper SWAT team entrance if they're coming in through the ceiling as well. Like they're on a mission. Luckily, Selena and Mark are at hand. They weren't even asleep, mate, and they ran downstairs. Selena's got the machete, goes crazy, and then. So what happens now? So basically
Mark gets bitten and he's trying to cover it up, but Selena takes no shit because she sort of explains that it's the virus spreads through blood and saliva, overwhelms its victims in sort of like 10 to 20 seconds. So Mark pretty much goes, "No, I've been bitten, but no," and she just starts hacking his arm off.
Do you think she's a little bit too quick? Do you think she's a little bit too quick to just to...
She's learnt, mate. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Although, to be fair, she, especially if you're going to kill the guy and he hasn't turned into a monster yet, chop his arm off, like get him straight in the head. I also think
you want to. She really didn't like that joke. She's like, yeah. You know, before you go, I'm gonna really.
How many times in this film, though? Yeah. So they say it travels through blood and saliva, but how many times do they hack the living shit out of people?
Yeah.
And you think someone that's gonna get in your mouth, in your eyes, or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they shout at them while they're doing it as well. She's like,
yeah.
But blood kind of goes everywhere. There's a few times where people got like blood on their face, and I just think all it would take is a little. Oh, what's that? Oh, a bit of Ribena, and then you're infected.
Especially like because there's a tiny little bit of blood that does infect one of them later on. Like it just takes like a tiny, tiny, tiny droplet to sort of turn them. So Selena's like
quite an important moment there when Selena says that she would kill Jim in a heartbeat if she needed to.
Yeah, yeah. Never mind being a zombie. Just be careful. Don't just piss her off.
You tell a shit joke.
If you drink all my orange juice, I will mug you right off.
Yeah. Is there any orange juice left, Jim?
Walking, sloshing around in his stomach, just like 4 liters of it.
Trying to like not slosh it too much.
I can hear it. I can hear that orange juice in your gut. No.
Okay, so she says, pop your clothes on, Jim, we're off. And then they decide to walk and they sort of head away. I was thinking, so Jim, has Jim been out for 28 days? Like, has he been...
Yeah, for at least 28 days, because he could have been hit by a bike before it all started. So he's been unconscious for a long time.
But like, so he hasn't walked in like a month or something. Like, I'm sure that like he wouldn't be able to walk at this point in time.
He'd have to lie in the pussy wagon and make his feet come back to life.
Beg your pardon?
That's what he'd have to do.
What? He'd have to lie in the pussy wagon.
It's in Kill Bill, isn't it? When
she wills her toes out.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that went straight over your head, didn't it, Luke?
It did.
Well.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so they're walking through London and they see, by the way, this is kind of creepy, just to see London dark like that. Like, I don't know how. Because London's always like lit up. To just see it kind of dark like that. I mean, how they did that? Did they have to sort of visually, unless they filmed it in the day and just made it look dark? I don't know.
I always thought it looked like maybe there was some sort of like overlay over sort of everything.
Mm.
So they must have filmed it either at night or filmed it in the day, and then there's just some sort of overlay on the background, possibly. I don't know.
So they're on a little jaunt through London, and then they see one of the towers, like a council. Estate tower block kind of thing. There's some Christmas lights flickering on and off, and then they decide to have a look. They make their way up the stairs. Jim, this is when we get the fizzy pop out again. There's so much like fizzy pop and sweets and Maltesers. I mean, there's like a big bag of Maltesers at one point.
Basically,
there's all sorts of chocolate. Yeah, and there's lots of like.
Basically, when society collapses, everyone can just eat what they want. So, you know, people don't care about diets anymore. They just go get the Maltesers down me.
Yeah.
Wash it down with a can of Tango.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So maybe this is how Jim is able to walk, even though he really shouldn't be able to. Like, I think they even say, like, he's just purely...
He's crashing, right?
He's crashing, yeah. Jim... I get the idea. Jim is pretty much meant to be, like, the kid of the film. Because even, like, here, when they get attacked in the stairwell... Selena runs away, and he's like shouting for her, like she's his mum. Yeah, please wait, mum, wait. Like,
it's like full of orange juice, and I can't run up the stairs.
I'm full of orange juice, I had a piss.
I've got a stitch.
That's why he has to stop. Gonna rest. Oh yeah, I'm not full of orange juice. I'm just crashing.
Yeah. Yeah. Interestingly, he goes to the Tango as well, so he obviously has like a bit of orange. Yeah. I like orange. Like, he's a proper toddler in this film. Oh, right up to the end when he sort of makes his breakthrough. They run away. Selena's sort of well ahead, and she's like, fuck that guy for a can of sliced biscuits. And then Brendan Gleeson pops in wearing his, like, police gear. He throws them over the stairwell, and, like, so they sort of fall down. You get to see some pretty interesting
bashing. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That looks good.
Yeah. I don't know if they look. It does look a little bit fake, but I like it. I enjoyed it anyway.
A little bit.
And then they sort of hole up in what's his name? Frank's
Frank's Council Flat.
What did you think? Go on.
Guess we're going to have a little bit of creme de menthe as well to celebrate.
What do you think to...
Nice bastard.
What do you think to Frank's Cockney accent? Brendan Gleeson's Cockney accent? Oh,
yeah,
what,
right.
What, I thought... what did you think to... is her name Hannah? What did you think to Hannah's accent? What was her accent? Because I suppose she's supposed to be a Cockney if she like lives with her dad. But
just generic child voice.
Generic child... Sometimes she had some dialogue. See, like she had some dialogue and I was like, what? What? Like, so it just didn't sound right coming out of her mouth sometimes. She sounded a bit like... It was a bit of a dialed-in performance, I felt like, in places.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strange one. Like, if you listen like to her accent, it just sounds weird sometimes. It sounds kind of fake.
All right. It sounds a bit Birmingham in places.
Well, she's
it?
From Liverpool, so I imagine she's got a proper Liverpoolian accent.
Oh!
Yeah. Okay. So they hole up in this place. We get like the first kind of like nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Scene in the film, I think, when they're sort of celebrating. It's, you know, when you're around Brendan Gleeson, it's always going to be fun. Did he kiss at some point? No, they don't kiss at this point. But there's like a hint that like there might something, maybe something will happen between them.
Oh, what? Who?
Selena and Frank, not
Selena Frank.
Whoa, I missed that one.
Yeah,
it's all in the subtext, guys.
Frank and Jim.
Yeah, this is the bit when Selena gives them a bit of a slagging off after they've just taken them in when they've gone to bed, right after Cillian Murphy's had a shave, and then she's going, "Oh, P.S. They need us more than we need them. We'll mug them off the second, if they ain't got any, as soon as the creme de menthe's gone, we're off."
She's just a cold-hearted bitch. Just using them for their creme de menthe. That's it.
Yeah. We don't see the scene, but I'm sure there's a deleted scene of her checking the fridge for orange juice. Just to sort of see.
Try to get to it before Jim does.
Yeah. Jim has to have like a glass of milk. You know, he's got to ease his stomach. He's a little kid, after all, before he goes to sleep.
No, milk and orange juice will curdle in the stomach. You don't want to do that. You want to avoid those two things.
He'll be up all night.
He'll still have cramps.
Yeah.
Creme de menthe is a mint-flavoured liqueur, so he'll be all right.
So Selena, I think she helps him sleep. She rubs some Vicks on his chest or something. So Jim nods off finally. Finally, you know, she puts him to bed and he finally nods off eventually. And then I think they wake up and then Frank's like, "I heard you last night, and you're right, we do need you. I've got all these buckets on the roof and nothing's happening." I don't understand. Like, so the condensation thing, how does that work? You know, he's got like the cling film or whatever it is, the sheet.
That's just some morning dew and you wring it out into your mouth. Delicious.
Really?
Yeah, but he says it's not rained for 10 days, is that right?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if I believe that in London, but...
Well, yeah. It's in the film, mate. Don't dispute it. It's in the film.
Okay, so yeah, so Frank's got like a radio or something. He's got a little message on there that says, come to Manchester.
Come on down.
Come on down. We're not on fire.
Yeah, we definitely won't get rapey. And
it's funny you mention that.
What was that about a rapey thing? Doesn't matter.
I said definitely not.
You're not listening to me. I said definitely not. Yeah. Okay. So, and then Frank's like, yeah, we do need you because if I die, Hannah will be all alone. And she's a bit odd. We don't want her on her own too much. Okay. And then they get in Frank's black cab. I think it's really cool to have a black cab in the film for some reason. It's very English. It's a very London thing to have.
Puts the meter on.
It does, yeah.
He does. And that's the meter print. Keeps going throughout their journey as well. Yeah. I kept sort of catching glimpses of him, thinking, is that a bargain or not?
If he didn't get infected, do you think he would turn around and go, okay, that'd be 35 quid? And like, honestly, sincerely.
It was like 400 quid by the time they got to the blockade. He'd have gone,
rate
pay
you
up,
apply
pay up.
When there's an apocalypse. Yeah. Like, double time after midnight. But, you know, when society has collapsed, what do you put that on?
Jesus, who knows? To be fair, though, Jim is pretty loaded because he finds loads of money when he was roving around.
£50 notes.
Probably good for it.
Yeah. Okay, so they make their way. We have the tunnel scene here. Like, they're trying to get out of London. It's like the Dartford Tunnel or something like that, don't they? And then they sort of, this is what I mean. So this film has some really, like, fun bits. Like, when they start, like, driving up the over the cars, which I really don't think would work. they're all kind of laughing and like as they're like off-roading, like bumping around. Yeah. But that's like, so the Girl with the Gifts doesn't have anything like this. It's just purely sort of like downbeat, like sort of.
That's it. These random like sort of uplifting moments sort of just showing these characters' humanity as well. Like it doesn't fit. It's odd because it doesn't feel out of place. Even though this film is miserable most of the time, these moments don't feel out of place. They kind of just feel like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, this is fun.
Wee!
Oh, no.
Yeah.
This is like the fastest emotional roller coaster of all time there, because as they're running up to get over the like the barricade of cars, Jim's like, this is a shit idea. This is a wank idea. This is a shit idea. And then they get up on top and he's like, hey! And he's laughing along with the rest of them. And then the tyre burst and he's like, I told you it was a fucking shit idea. Wankers. I'm like, now what are we going to do? This is the worst place to break down.
Yeah. As well, and then we get the rats that sort of all run under their feet, and they're running from the infected. And you know, this is like, how many times during this scene are you just like, just fucking leave it? Like, I would not want to change the tire when they're all coming after you like that. All the infected.
Still works the broken tire, right? You can go a little ways with it. You can outrun people.
That's what I was thinking.
Did he change the wheel or the tire? They changed the wheel, right? It's more difficult.
They did change the wheel, but he did have a flat tire, didn't they? So
yeah.
They could have cracked on then.
Yeah, but for some reason, Frank just loves the thrill of the chase. And they just like, oh, don't worry, the infected might get us.
Yeah.
And then after they escape from there, is it after or before when they go to a lovely Budgeons?
No,
it's just after that bit, right? That's when they pop to the supermarket and they have a lovely shopping trip, which features my favourite product placement of the entire film. Where Selena's like, if I see another chocolate bar, it'll be too soon. Unless it's a Terry's chocolate orange.
Ooh, it's not really a chocolate bar, though, is it? That's why. Wait a minute, how does Jim feel about Terry's chocolate orange?
Oh, I'm sure he likes it.
He's off camera, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, it combines two of the things he loves, sugary chocolate treats and orange.
Yeah.
Maybe he's off camera because he was just going nuts at it.
Later on, Jim expresses his love for raisins as well. He likes. I think he likes more, you know, natural sugary things.
He likes most sultanas.
Yeah.
That's when when he's looking at the whiskey with Frank, he buggers up probably to the Cura aisle to get the most orangey drink possible.
Because he's looking at the whiskey and he's thinking, secretly, Jim's thinking, that's bloody yuck, that is. I don't want any of that.
He's actually thinking, I'll get him. I've got an idea for a mixer. Just box it to the orange. And also the music in this bit is maybe my favourite song in the entire thing. It's that like weirdly like a proper ditty. It's like a game ditty. Okay, so then they leave here. They quickly stop off to get some petrol. whilst they're doing that, Jim goes inside because...
Okay, he goes inside looking for cheeseburgers.
Looking for cheeseburgers because he's unruly. He's high on sugar and raisins.
And he's got a baseball bat.
Yeah, and he's got a baseball bat. And he's like, you know, you can't tell him what to do. He'll start sobbing or, you know, throwing a tantrum. And he goes in. And I do feel like this bit, so he gets attacked by like a zombie kid and he has to kill the kid. I do feel like that's part of his metaphorical journey to adulthood through this film. So he has to like kill the kid for him to sort of, you know, grow up a little bit. It's a bit
this is creepy as well when he sort of just says hello and the kid just sort of drops down from somewhere silently, pads over towards him.
SWAT zombie. There's a lot of that sort of ninja-y sort of moves going on.
What do you think the infected do when they're not running after people? Just mill about?
I was thinking about that. They mustn't do anything because they don't attack each other. Even though the virus makes you really, really like narky.
Yeah.
You got the rage on.
It's surprising that
they don't get each other. It's not like Kingsman that everyone fights each other. They're alright with each other. They're like, right, no, same team.
Doesn't quite make sense, I guess. From what we know of the virus, from what we see from the start, why wouldn't they attack each other?
And that's like a pheromone thing. Like in The Girl with All the Gifts, they do that as well because they're sort of infected with the parasite thing. But
maybe just a throwaway line or something just to sort of
as your night out metaphor there in a rough town and night out. It's like those people that are also infected. They're those guys that you've shook hands with. And it's like, no, you're all right, mate. You're all right.
Yeah.
You're all right. Then you're safe.
Wow. Yeah. I think every now and again, maybe one or two have a little scrap, but for the most part, they probably get on. You get the drunkards in the kebab shop, they'll get on until someone pushes in.
An outsider.
Fucking push him, will you bastard?
Yeah. Okay. Then they sort of camp out somewhere. Look at some horses. So it's more of a sweet scene. They're sort of having fun, chilling, bonding.
This was a moment again where I just thought, how can you sleep out in the open?
It's fucking freezing.
Even if you were thought you were miles away from, you know, the infected, with everything that's going on, how can you even start to think about sleeping?
Well, sleeping tablets.
Brilliant.
Yeah, they have like they take the tablets, don't they, to sort of make them go to sleep? Oh, you mean like even then?
Yeah.
You wouldn't really want to. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to, would you? I know one of them, like Frank sort of stays awake for a while, doesn't he, trying to...
Yeah.
And then we sort of get a dream sequence with Jim as well.
Yeah, and he's all alone. Mum! I've been like that. I've done that before. And I thought, it's like when your mum leaves you in the supermarket or something. It's terrifying. Okay, and then he wakes up and he says, and Frank says, you're just dreaming. And he goes, thanks, Dad. That's really embarrassing when you call someone dad in the real world, like a teacher or a doctor or something.
Wait, does he actually do that or not?
Yeah, he says thanks, Dad.
No, does he?
Yeah.
Well, and he thought he had problems before, now he's got this social faux pas to navigate.
Oh, no. Yeah. Thanks, Dad. Everyone in the school, fucking hell. He's done for at least 2 months now.
And you've just had that first kiss with Selena as well. That's off now. Now you've shown that how uncool you are.
Yeah. So then they sort of make their way, get back in the car. Things, you know, still going quite well. And then they make their way to Manchester. Manchester's just burning all completely on fire. Danny Boyle is actually from Manchester, so I don't know what that means. Just sort of hates his hometown. I don't know.
But he hates it.
Bloody northern nonsense. And then so this is when he gets to the blockade. So this is where, unfortunately, Frank, they don't see anyone, just see some dead bodies. And unfortunately, Frank, he becomes a slave to his own rage as he gets angry and he kicks the fence. Which
He hates crows.
Yeah.
Get out of it.
Yeah.
The bloody
things
crow.
Things are after that cordial they've got from the supermarket. It tells them it's too orangey for crows. kicks the old fence.
Yeah.
gets this is horrible. Blood in the eye.
When he gets blood in the eye, like it really makes my eyes water. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's a cool little camera thing where it's like inside the blood drop as well as it lands. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes, Hannah, is her name Hannah? I keep forgetting her name. Hannah comes over and she's like, you're all right, Dad? And he goes, I'm all right, just get away. She goes, have you got a right beater in your eye? And he goes, no, get away. Get away, it's not for you.
He goes, I really love you. Do you?
Yeah, bloody do! I love you so much! and then, also, what's his name? Jim is about to kill him.
With the baseball bat.
And this will be the only other person he'd actually kill. And then he gets sort of shot. That's my gun noise. From all angles. And then the army sort of turn
like
up.
Shot like a lizard of some sort. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I like it. So the army turn up and they take them back to their... They've like got a big country house, estate type thing that they've kind of like got holed up in.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got like landmines. Landmines all over the front lawn.
All over the bloody front lawn. And then we're introduced to... I don't want to name all these guys because there's like about 10 of them. They all seem to be kind of like dicks. These are actually the guys you see out in Mansfield on a Friday night. These are the guys you don't want to sort of talk to.
It's like a who's who of like Albert Square as well, isn't it? Half of those guys have all been in EastEnders as bit parts.
Yeah. And we're introduced to Christopher Eccles. I think he shows them around. He says, this is the house. This is where they cook. And this is this is our black man. He's on a chain, as you know, as he should be. The only black man in the film. He's chained up, and I only noticed that this time.
They've managed to duck it because one of the soldiers is also black. So don't worry, they haven't.
Oh, they do. Missed that.
They're all right, and the other one, and of all the others, he's probably the nicest one.
He is. Yeah, they've gone for the both extremes. They said we don't want to stereotype, you know. We've got the full range of black actors in this film. There's a guy who's missing hair. He's got alopecia or something. It's, I don't know what happened.
I just thought it was a real cool hairstyle. Like he'd gone
saw Jim. Like the fashion had sort of travelled so quick the way
the
fashion
head injury
goes.
Look.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gone. The world's over. I can finally have the haircut I've always wanted. There we go.
Yeah, walking around Worsley Manor like that, whatever it's called. Okay, and then so what happens now? So I guess they have dinner or something, and he has a bad omelette.
He made bad omelette, didn't he? Didn't realise the eggs were off.
Yeah.
Sorry, sir. Then some infected attack the front lawn, and all the landmines go off, and they start shooting all those zombies. This is when we sort of get the couple of alpha males sort of grunting.
Yeah.
So shooting them.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want, a fucking sweet, eh?
Silverback males. Yeah. Proper, like, over-the-top sort of cockney, sort of gangster guy. And then we get another weird thing of, like, Jim making everyone his dad, where the Christopher Eccles, like, ruffles his hair, says, you'll be all right, kid, and, like, ruffles his hair.
I think he just wanted to touch his brain injury.
Yeah.
His lovely new haircut.
Tickling in the scar there. Yeah. How's it feel? Oh.
Oh, it was a bit weird.
Yeah, like chewing aluminium. Have you ever done that with like, if you got like a fill-in, like a chew a bit of aluminium?
Oh, no.
Touch it with a fork.
Jesus. Okay. And then, I think that's when he says, look, I got to be honest with you, Jim.
He puts it on the line, right?
Yeah, Jimbo, Jimmy boy, come here. You know me. I'm Christopher Eccleston. You know, I've got needs.
You know when I said in the radio broadcast that this wasn't rapey?
Yeah. It kind of is.
May have exaggerated that a little.
I was lying. And so Christopher Eccleston, as we know in the last film.
That's the length he'll go to.
Yeah.
He'll come back before with a ghost for some ghost sex with the others, and now he'll build an entire stately home of soldiers and put on a radio show.
Yeah. Just to lure them in. He calls it the honey trap method, and he he offers them food and bad eggs. All the omelettes you can eat. You know, in exchange for babies. And I don't understand why he does this to Jim, though. So Jim's like, okay, we've got to leave. We've got to get out of here because they're going to get a little bit rapey soon. And then as he's leaving, he gets sort of knocked out. And then he says to Jim, I think you'll be okay here if you sort of accept it or something. But then the next thing he knows, he's like saying, nah, change of mind, execute him. Like,
yeah, send him out to the woods.
Yeah.
The sergeant that disagrees, right?
So they he says he promised them women, but it's been 28 days. Well, a couple more days.
Yeah.
But there are men in loveless marriages who go much longer than that about sex, about turning into rapey. You know, it's a bit weird. If we were made to think that they'd been, do you know what I mean, it'd been 28 weeks or 28 months or something, and they hadn't got laid.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm not ever condoning it, mate. All right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying maybe we can understand.
Than 28 days before.
28 days is like, it's insane. They'd be wanking each other off before then.
Yeah. I think they would, because like in San Quentin, if you ever watch their documentaries, one of them normally starts growing the hair and acting as the female. It's really weird. Whatever that is, I don't know what sort of what causes that. But like, one of the males always becomes like the bitch of the prison, and they feel quite powerful because they've got like some sway as the female. It's really weird. You should watch the. I think Louis Theroux did a thing about San Quentin and. Really interesting.
Oh wow! So we think that scenario it probably should have happened.
Well, the guy who's cooking is in like a pink. It's 28 days, and he's already in the pink apron. He's well on his way.
He's well on his way. Very, very creepy.
Okay.
So when Jim and the other, and there's another one of the soldiers who sort of tries to object, and he sort of gets chucked in with the two guys who are going to get executed. He sort of explains his sort of. Theory about the infected at this point, don't they? Do you remember?
So he says like the default state of the world is not to have humans on it, right? And the infection is just a way for it to get back to the default state.
Yeah, so it'll be back to normal. But then he also does sort of mention that he reckons it's just the UK. The UK has kind of just been left to its own devices by the rest of the world, and if they can somehow get off the godforsaken island, then they'll be all right.
Yeah, so it's been quarantined or something.
Yeah,
So they're not even gonna. They take those two out, and he's not even gonna shoot the guy. He's gonna stick him with a knife, which is pretty harsh.
This is the worst one, right? They send the one that already probably was a psychopath by day two.
Yeah.
Is that the world's ended? I need to rape someone. I need to murder someone.
Yeah.
Come on.
So as before, he sticks him. The other guy, who's a little bit kinder. Shoots him instead, and then Jim sees that as an opportunity to get out of dodge.
This is good thinking from Jim, because I think anyone in that scenario would just run, but he just slings himself down with a load of dead bodies and sort of camouflages himself, which is good. But I also think if that didn't work, you'd be really disappointed, wouldn't you?
It's
your
a
one chance.
If you did it and then you were like, stand up, mate.
That's what I thought. If I did that, that's exactly what happened. I'd lie there, good.
I'm a tree. Like, you know, one thing I would say, these army men are kind of shit with their weapons. Like, there's a lot of, like, openly sort of firing, like, just spraying bullets.
They strike me as the kind of regiment or something that probably hasn't been in combat.
TA.
Like this.
Maybe it was the TA.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like it's like, what's it called? Dad's Army, but like the new version.
Oh, what? I've got to use this now, have I? Jesus. I'm no good at that. Please do it.
So Jim escapes over the wall, and they're like, don't worry, because Manchester's on fire, there's loads of rage virus people, ragees, let's call them, sort of out there. They'll get him. And then they go back to have the reward. Selena, they're going to get her in a dress, and they're going to have some fun. And I guess...
Why put someone in a dress if you're going to... Again, not condoning these horrible things, but like, I'm going to dress you right up in a lovely ball gown.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Do you think this is them sort of like trying to have some sort of semblance of order and like, it's a nice thing. This is like a lovely date. So you're going to put on a nice dress that the lady in the house would wear. We're going to wine and dine you. We'll get we'll get as much orange juice and bad omelets as you can fill your stomach with.
Yeah. And then we'll rape
you. And then and then Jim from afar hears someone say orange juice and just goes, what? I'm on my way.
This is when he does his transformation, right? He hears them say orange juice, and then from being out in the woods for an afternoon without a t-shirt on, he becomes Batman.
Yeah. He looks up and he sees a plane flying over, and he goes, "I need to get off this country and get some orange juice, abroad." He goes, "There's only one way I'm going to do it. I'm going to have to man up."
The oranges of Seville are waiting for him.
Yeah. He wants some, sangria now, and he starts to wind the, what do you call those alarms? Like World War II?
Like an air raid alarm, right?
Blitzkrieg sort of thing.
Siren.
Yeah. Alarm siren thing. And then, a load of them, Christopher Eccles cakes and his lads, they sort of go out to sort of get him back. And then...
Just starts picking them off one by one. Batman style.
He turns into Predator.
I'm missing a scene here. I think there needs to be like some type of extent. If this was modern, like a film that came out today, there'd be a tie-in comic that showed the day when he was on a school trip around this stately home, which is where Howie knows where all the secret passages are.
We need like a short film called 28 Seconds Later, where as he's out there, he sort of does like a quick training montage, and like he becomes Jim the Man, and he gets
the blueprint to the house.
It's like scoring over, like going over the blueprint, doing some press ups.
What is it then? Are we just saying it's just pure survival kicks in?
I think so. I think the idea here is like he's finally decided to give in to what makes a man, and that's violence and killing and being comfortable with that. Because Christopher Eccles then said, this is all about people killing people. It's all about that people are infected with rage. I don't think you truly become a human or mature into a human being until you accept that that's what you have to do. And Jim finally accepts it, I think. I think, although it is like kind of a bit of a stretch, I think symbolically, I think it works.
I think it kind of works just because the soldiers are so incompetent.
If he was
going up against like a highly trained sort of group of like elite soldiers, you probably think this is a bit ridiculous. But because he's going up against pretty much a bevel like of idiots,
I feel like he turns into a bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator. If he got some mud over him and stuff, I think it'd probably work quite well. Just sort of shouting. If it bleeds, we can kill it. And then. He picks them off. And then what happens? So he gets back to the.
He double teams it, really, doesn't he? He sort of unleashes the infected guy, takes out the cowardly soldiers, then he creeps onto the roof and stoves in the head of the bad guy against the wall.
Yeah.
Just as it's all sort of come into a head. There's a couple of tense bits in there. You see Hannah hiding behind the mirror from the infected guy. Yeah.
A lot of them like sort of give in to their fear, don't they? These soldiers, like the other black guy, he literally just sort of caves into his fear, and he doesn't even want to. He won't even escape.
He just sits on the floor, doesn't he?
Yeah. He sort of lets it happen. So this is what we get to like fever pitch. We've got the music. I think this is the second. This is the only other time, right, Ben, that the music comes in.
Yeah, I think this is the only time. This is the only time this particular track is used. Obviously, a lot of moments in the film where sort of like crescendos of music is used to a really great degree, but this is like, I mean, this is ace. It just sort of builds and builds and builds with layer and layer and layer, sort of pretty much playing the same melody, but electric guitar sort of come in sort of as Jim's going ape shit, taking people out.
And then this is the first instance of thumbs in the eyes. I think we see a lot of it after this, but this is like the first time I saw it, and the scream is like blood curdling. Like the way the Cockney guy sort of screams, he's sort of got his thumbs right in his eyes, and that music, like there's something truly horrific about that.
Yeah, and obviously that's the moment where Selena sees Jim, but just like the sort of shadow of him, so she can't quite see him, and she becomes convinced that he's infected. So obviously it shows that he's given into those animal urges so much that he now looks like one of the infected. Yeah. And obviously she does take more than a heartbeat, and she sort of hesitates.
You know what saves him?
And he stops her.
His beautiful emerald blue eyes. Like...
And the slight whiff of orange. Yeah. She's like, oh, wait.
I'd know that smell anywhere. Yeah, yeah, I remember when I first saw this film, I thought it was going to end very differently at that point. You know, you watch from on it, she's gonna machete him, but no.
I did say.
Oh. And it's there is a moment where he just kind of looks at her and kind of just—he's breathing horribly. You're like, just go, it's me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mum. Don't do that. Shit.
Mum, fuck, bollocks.
You see, that's why he hadn't gone full Arnie. If he'd really done that, he'd have had like a one-liner. To say to that guy, he had to put his eyes out and then gone, nice to see you again.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, nice to see you, nice. And then he would leave. Okay, and then what happens there? So they get out, right? What happens to Hannah?
They go to escape in Frank's cab. Yeah. But when they open it, Christopher Eccleston's in there and he pops the cap in Jim's ass. But then they do the classic reverse the cab into the horrible zombie infested house. So Christopher Eccleston gets pulled out and destroyed, and then they're about to leave the sort of house, but then the gates are bloody locked. But Hannah just puts her foot down, and they smash into her.
Yeah,
and a classic sitcom freeze frame at the end of this.
There's a lot of that. I saw a few freeze frames, and I thought that's interesting. I don't particularly enjoy it, but like it seems to work in this. So they would have freeze framed, and then that whole sitcom outro music. Well, they were thick and thicker, but you know what I mean? That should have played, and the credits would come down.
Or like Grange Hill or something.
There's a bit. So there's a crazy, what they call a hip hop montage with things do you know what I mean? That's sort of
a requiem
sort
of drug taking montage of them sort of saving Jim's life in a hospital somewhere. Yeah. So they made it to some sort of hospital.
And there's a bit where he's opening a can of Tango, and then his pupil dilates.
His belly sloshing as well.
Classic memory.
Yeah, there is a really interesting image. It's like. It cuts to the landscape, the green landscape, upside down, and it's, the word hell is written on the floor.
Yeah.
I thought that was really striking.
You only see that for a second, don't you? There was sorry to just jump straight back, but there was also a moment where very much earlier in the film when they were driving along, we sort of see some flowers, and it was almost like a really weird painting.
I think is it supposed to look like an actual painting, like a famous one?
It was like a Photoshop. Effect. It
pretty much was.
Just to make it look like a Renaissance painting or something.
There is also in the stately home. There's sculptures, and I think one of them is a fairly famous one. There's a lot of human art, layered throughout the film.
Because obviously there is a sequence as well where sort of Selena says to Jim, "You're never going to watch a film again that hasn't already been made. You're never going to read a book that hasn't already been written," which kind of makes sense because you wouldn't read a book after it. You wouldn't read a book before it's been written anyway.
Yeah. Stupid Selena.
Stupid Selena trying to make a point. Trying to make a point and just coming across an idiot.
Yeah.
She's only known him a couple of days. So you're saying I haven't got a book in me, Selena? Cheers.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of good ideas.
Yeah.
I've been in hospital for 6 weeks.
He was dictating a book when he got hit by the car on his bike delivery. Okay, so and then we end with there's some starving zombies dying, so we sort of know how that's going to play out. And then a plane goes over, right? And then Jim smiles at the plane.
And, yeah, but they run out with their big sheets that they've sort of all stitched together.
And they've written hello, right?
Yeah, they've written hello, but with a couple of red bits of fabric, which really sets my teeth on edge. You know, I don't like it. It's all in white, and then suddenly two little pockets of red.
Why?
If you'd have been that pilot, you wouldn't have picked them up. You'd have just flown on.
Yeah, you would have gone. What the fuck? Can't take these guys seriously.
Why would they write hello? SOS is the thing, right? And they use a lot less fabric. That's gets the point of hello. I think they're just being.
Yeah. Take it or just high.
Because then you wouldn't have had that confusing bit where a pilot that had come over the day before, I ain't landing there, it says hell.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, just
because they say the plane's coming back again, so we're made to think that the plane has already been over.
Yeah.
The first time it came over, it would have said hell.
It would have been, it's been ignoring them for days, H, they didn't listen, because just an H, the helicopter might have landed.
Yeah. I'm a plane. It's not for me. Okay, so and that's how the film ends. There was an alternative ending. I think the desired ending was to have Jim die. But, you know, I'm kind of glad they didn't do that, to be honest. I quite like how it ends.
I was reading there was a third one. They didn't even film. It was just storyboarded, but they abandoned it quite early on. So there's the one that we have. There's the one where he dies in the hospital, and then it's just the chicken at the breakfast table instead of him. And then there's the one they didn't film, which had no soldiers in it. They just talked about doing it with just the cast of the main survivors. Frank gets infected as normal, but then they keep him. They find a scientist who says, oh, there's a cure, but you have to do a total blood transfusion. And Jim sacrifices himself to cure Frank because they give him all of his blood because he's the only match. But Danny Boyle said, it turned out we storyboarded it, but then actually we thought that was a shit idea, so we didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just a note as well, we haven't really talked about it, but it's written by Andrew Garland, who is one of our favourite writers. He wrote The Beach, the novel. He wrote and directed Ex Machina. He wrote and produced Dread. He's a real talent, that guy.
Who's this? Alex Garland, yeah?
Andrew Garland. I think I keep getting his name wrong. Is that Andrew or Alex?
Alex, isn't it?
Summit Garland.
It's bloody Summit Garland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wrote and directed Ex Machina, right?
Yeah. He's when I first read The Beach, I knew he was like a phenomenal sort of talent. And I just sort of see him sort of continue on, do like other mediums. It's been really interesting. And obviously Danny Boyle, he doesn't really get that much wrong, Danny Boyle. He knows what he's doing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Danny Boyle is the man.
Yeah.
Right,
okay, you ready for some trivia?
Aye.
Do it.
Cool. Okay, number one. Megan Burns, who played the young girl Hannah, tried to reinvent herself as a goth singer called Barbara Curse. True or false?
True.
And yeah, I want that too much. It has to be true.
Okay, sort of. I mean, so she reinvented herself as a goth singer called Betty Curse. Her highest charting entry was 116 in the UK charts with songs such as Do You Mind If I Cry, Excuse the Blood, and God This Hurts. So yeah, she's actually she was a recorded musician.
I'm Googling this and I think I recognize her.
Yeah.
In some way.
Maybe from Scuzz or Kerrang or MTV2. Yeah. It's the only three music channels I went on.
Yeah. MTV Bass? Poorly ever one.
No. Okay, number two, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, so to achieve those incredible deserted scenes of London, the police had to close the roads at 4 a.m. And to prevent angry drivers, Danny Boyle used attractive young women, including his daughter, to make the requests to get the drivers to, you know, be okay with it. True or false?
He pimped his daughter out.
Pimped his daughter out. Yeah.
True.
Also true.
That one is true. Okay. So two for two, let's say. Okay. Number three. The second choice to play Jim, so not the first choice of the cast, the second choice was Ryan Gosling. True or false?
False.
Yeah, he would have had an English guy, I think.
No, it's true. So the first choice was Ewan McGregor, because Danny Boyle loves Ewan McGregor. The second choice was Ryan Gosling for some reason, but he didn't want to do it. And then he ended up with Cillian Murphy, which I think was a better choice. Cillian Murphy is now one of the actors that you go to now.
He's one of the Christopher Nolan actors, isn't he?
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan's faves.
Yeah. Okay, two out of three. Not too bad. Okay, number four. Horror novelist Stephen King, you may have heard of him, bought out an entire showing of the film in New York City.
True.
Play the percentages. False.
It was true. So apparently he bought an entire screening just for him and some friends and that kind of thing.
And he
didn't even go because he hated that fucking film.
I bought off a screening so loads of people wouldn't get to see it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, so the last question. Upon seeing the special effects work of the city of Manchester on fire, director Danny Boyle simply smiled and said, "One day, one day." True or false?
False. I don't think he's that evil, is he, Luke? He's a lovely man.
Yeah, I'm gonna go false.
Okay, that was false. He is a lovely man. That is the fact of it. He just like always come across as a really nice guy, like a genuinely good guy. Okay, so well done. I think you got 3 out of 5. Well played. And now we have to grade the film. Andy, do you want to start?
Yeah, go on then. I love this movie. It's a great film. So I'm going to go Stone Cold A on this one.
Nice.
Ooh.
Stone Cold Steve A. I like it.
Stone Cold Steve A. I'm going to have to go one more, I think.
What?
My first horror hangout, A+.
Nice.
I think I'm gonna judge that on sort of rewatchability. Gonna get better than that. Yeah. Rewatchability, as I said, I watch this a lot, and it always kind of affects me. It's one of those films that genuinely gets under my skin, and I think as a horror film, for no matter how many times you still watch it, it still creeps me out. So that for me is like it's a perfect horror film for me.
Okay, I'm going for an A as well. So this could be like the highest rated film on the show completely. But I don't know what it is about it. Like, it's the dawn of Dawn of the Dead for our generation. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the Night of the Living Dead of our generation. Like, it's just set the tone. Like, it's just one of those films that everyone I know has seen. Everyone I know has been completely scared by it, and also the idea of it. And it's just lingered in our sort of public consciousness. And it's just so well done. And like you said, the rewatchability is. Like, I've seen this film so many times, and even this year I've seen it once before, and it still scared me. Like,
it's just got so many moments that you just want to talk about with people. You know, when you start talking about it, you're like, oh yeah, and then this bit, oh, you remember this bit and this bit. Do you know what I mean? That's just great when you sort of can really, really enjoy a film with somebody like that. It's just saying, which bit made you turtlehead the most?
For me, which turtlehead the most? Okay. I suppose you could say it came out quite vigorously in the eye, the thumbing in the eye scene. The thumbs went in and the head came out.
I think for me, it's always been that church sequence, just that bit where he says, "Hello," and the two of them turn around and look at him. That for me is like,
You saying hello, actually, Ben, reminded me. I brought along a cheeky bit of trivia myself. Oh, I know, a little bit of a surprise. See, I'll put this question to you. How long into the film, how many of Jim's lines is it that it's hello in a row before he says anything else?
All right.
Well, so what's the question?
Counted.
How many times
does he say hello in the film before he says anything else? He says it a fair few times before he utters another word.
14.
That seems like a lot. I don't think so. I would say 8. 8 times.
Who's closer? It's 7. It's 7 hellos, then father, oh shit.
Really? So father is his first word. That's interesting. That plays into my whole thing. Also, another turtle head moment was, you know, cringe moment anyways, when he calls Frank his dad. Oh, embarrassing.
Yeah. That's the scariest moment. That could happen to any of us.
Yeah, that's like a relatable horror. Yeah, Ben, you should watch that back and just to hear that dad moment is cringeworthy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. How many lines does he first say orange juice?
I mean, he's mouthing it from the second he wakes up. He doesn't.
His voice is too raspy. He can't say it. Yeah.
Nurse, get me some orange juice for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
He's just got a drip next to him.
That IV
That's why he wakes up.
Yeah.
He's out.
That IV drip was actually a Tropicana plugged into his,
Do we reckon, Jim, does he like orange juice with bits or with smooth?
Pulp.
I reckon he likes bits.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's why all that fizzy pop doesn't cut it. Like when he's had all those Capri Suns, that's why he has to go to his mom and dad's house, where he knows they keep the good stuff.
Also, it's why that orange juice only had like two swallows of actual liquid in there. The rest was pulp. Just a bigger
Is that the reason he wanted to go to his parents' house? He's like, "What? Do you want to go to your parents' house to see if they're alive?" Fuck no, I want to go get some orange juice.
Yeah.
He said they're going to be dead, but if they're going to be dead, the fridge is going to be chock full of OJ.
Yeah. And then, you know, like on films where they get dollars in their eyes, I saw like oranges, Satsumas flicking across his eyes in clementines.
Rewrite the film summary in a post-apocalyptic world, one man's quest.
For orange juice. That's actually a really good idea. Okay, next week we are not going to be doing The Omen, which is the next one on the list. We're actually going to be doing Stephen King's It, which comes out. I'm going to watch it on Friday. You guys got tickets booked?
I've not got tickets booked, but I'll probably go either Friday or over the weekend, ready for next week's episode.
It's getting a lot of hype. I'm a bit worried. It might be getting too hyped now.
Yeah, I've heard it's good and I've heard it's scary. I'm watching the original. Mates come around to watch the original on Wednesday this week, and then I think we're going to go watch the new one on Monday.
Nice. And
lovely. Delicious.
And are you're both reading it, right? Reading the book.
Very, 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 very slowly.
Very slowly. I think I'm maybe 400, maybe 500 pages in now.
See, if you said I've read 500 pages of a book, most of the time you'd be like, "Ooh, it's a big book." It's only just starting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's only just getting into it.
Yeah,
Jesus, it's a slog, but I really like it.
Yeah.
I really like it. I think
the writing in that is some of the best Stephen King writing. Just like the best prose work, anyway.
Yeah, just good.
Okay,
nicely.
So I think that's about it. This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude. And once again, thanks to our amazing friend of the show, Andy. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
All right. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.